Life Audio.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined as always in studio by my good friend, my partner in radio, Barnabas Piper. Pipe, we are allegedly going to be joined by Ron at some point in the indiscriminate future here this morning.
This is new. Normally he's on with us and then Irish goodbye is like 20 minutes into an episode. I wonder if is there such a thing as an Irish hello, or is it fashionably late? Like what's the equivalent to the Irish goodbye?
I don't know. I gotta tip the cap to him though, because you know, he's found a new way to sort of nibble away at the margins here as we inch toward closing the show. Maybe we'll show up late and leave early. Who knows?
Yeah, it dawned on me, this may be our last recorded episode pre-live event, because if we record next week, that would release kind of in conflict with the live show episode. So this may be our...
Dude, that's wild.
In that case, even more of a hat tip to Ronnie for managing to show up late. Granted, we didn't tell him it was the last one. I don't think it would have made any difference.
No, it wouldn't have,
To find a new way to dip out on... The final recorded episode of the Happy Rant.
Yeah, on brand till the very end, Ronald J. Martin is. But Pipe, we are closing the show in a couple of weeks in Indianapolis, September 24 at Soma Church, 7 p.m. Where can they find tickets, Pipe? Last-minute ticket sales.
Yes, last-minute ticket sales. If you go to thehappyrant.com, there is a tab there that says the live show. It has all the details on location, so the address, the time. It'll be at 7 p.m. on September 24th. Tickets are $35. We will have swag there, for attendees in terms of our books, and Ronnie will probably have some music, and Josh Byers from Visual Theology will be there. We'll have a couple sponsors who are doing giveaways. But then mostly it will just be a night of good fun with us recording some episodes, us interacting with listeners, perfectly willing to hang out until all hours, because we appreciate our listeners so much. And, you know, we would, in all seriousness, we wouldn't have a podcast if it wasn't for people who continued to tune in and listen and tell us, you know, give us ideas like the topic we're going to have today and make this all worth it. So, so thehappyrant.com, hit the live show. We still have tickets available, and it should be an awesome time.
Dude, 100%. These are my favorite times on the podcast. You know, the live shows have been highlights over the years. I look forward to them every year. So fun to interact with people in the audience. And this is the last hurrah. So get your tickets and come join us. And you can check us out on some other podcasts after we close this show down. I am on a show called Cluck every week, creatively named, with a guy named Josh Loftus. So we drop every Wednesday. You can find Pipe on his church podcast, and you can find Ronnie, I don't know, like cleaning at Jared C. Wilson's pool, or living in his pool house, or whatever they're doing together. They got
the art of for the church, or whatever they're calling it. I guess there's a difference between the art of pastoring and for the church. I don't know what it is, but they're scheming and dreaming another iteration of a pastor's podcast.
Dreaming it up as the two of those boys do. Pipe, we have a fun topic after the break. We're going to do a high school memories episode, and we'll get to that after this quick break.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Scott. As a servant of God, wife, and mother of four, I understand the juggle of multiple roles and stages. That's why I created the Encourager podcast, to help guide us through the messy middle stage of life. Join me on The Encourager as we challenge the chaos and embrace harmony. Together, we'll create practical systems to balance your roles and fulfill priorities. And we will do it while having joy and energy for both home and work life. Tune in for inspiring stories and interviews, actionable tips, and methods to do both home and work life. Because here, we believe you can do all things, just not all at once.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
All right, Pipe, we're back. Somebody online was interacting with somebody else online doing some high school memories. One of the listeners shouted us out, said we needed to do this on the program. In true Happy Rant fashion, and this is thematic too, Pipe, given our history over the past decade, we have done zero show prep. We learned of this topic idea like 4 minutes ago. So we're going to do some high school memories off the cuff.
Oh, and to complete the, like, we haven't changed a bit in 10 years. Ronnie's Twitter account was the one that stirred this up. So this was Ronnie's inspiration for a show that he is not on yet that we discovered, you know, once we jumped on this call. So nothing about this has changed. We have not done any more prep. Right. We are just as sort of winging it as we ever have been. So, you know, way to finish strong, us.
Absolutely. So it would probably be helpful here, Pipe, for the two of us and then Ron at whatever point he shows up to, like, just tell the listeners what types of high schools we attended, like what kind of context we were in high school. And then we can, you know, we can kind of drop some categories and do some memory making along those lines. So what kind of school did you go to?
I went to three different high schools. So, middle school and then freshman year of high school, I was at a small Christian school in the Minneapolis suburbs. Up to that point, my parents were reluctant to send me to public school. I don't think it was so much because of moral corruption. They weren't uber afraid of things as much as they just looked around and thought the education stunk. Yeah. They're probably right. When I say small, I mean high school was probably, middle school and high school total was probably 125, 150 students. So,
oh, wow.
Not big. Yeah. And then, sophomore year, I hated that Christian school experience with all of my might. My parents still weren't willing to send me to public school, so we compromised and I homeschooled for a year, which basically meant I read books and didn't learn any math.
Dude, this is fascinating. Like, I didn't know all this about you. And if you don't mind, I've got a couple of follow up questions.
Yeah. And then junior senior year, I was at the local public school. I talked my parents into it. That was the one stretch of high school that I truly enjoyed.
And what was the name of this public school that you
Minneapolis South.
So, Minneapolis South. Dude,
yeah,
oh,
South
I love
High.
That, man. South High. That's so classic. Tremendous. What was your mascot? What was the South High? What?
South High Tigers.
Oh, dude. Again, classic. Black and orange color scheme?
Yep, or black and orange. Very. So our football uniforms were like Clemson-ish, but black and orange and no purple. So the same, like the paw on the side of the helmet, black helmets, orange paw.
Dude, I love the paw. We had the paw.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Love the paw. What was your number?
81.
81, dude. Good number.
Yeah, so because I was a tight end and defensive end, and Carl Eller, all-time Vikings great, wore 81 as defensive end, and it was a number that also worked at tight end. So I went with that.
Who had 81 in the league back then? Like, I'm trying to think in the, like, the late 90s, early 2000s, who would have had 81?
Not a lot of people.
Was Jason Witten 81?
He was 82.
82, that's right.
Yeah, there was a lot of, like, white possession receivers, you know, like Chris Walsh for the Vikings.
Dude. Oh, shout out Chris Walsh.
All-time special teams great.
All-time
Ronnie's. Ronnie has wondered if he's jumped into the Happy Rant Sports podcast.
Yeah,
not really wondering.
Yeah,
not
big
really
fan. Wondering. He's a big fan of it, and a big fan of this podcast. Listens all the time. Ron, we're talking about high school. I'm kind of interviewing Pipe about his high school experiences. And Pipe, I wanna hearken back to something that you touched on. Why didn't you like the Christian high school, the small Christian high school?
So it, it a variety of reasons. One, I was middle school and freshman year, which means there was 0% chance I was going to like any school.
Yeah, that's true.
Or any aspect of life, actually. Middle school is terrible. Also, I grew up in the city, near downtown Minneapolis, mm-hmm. pretty, you know, diverse neighborhood, urban environment, mm-hmm. and would drive 25, 30 minutes to this school out in the suburbs. Yeah. And, you know, like we were a middle-class white family. So it wasn't as if, you know, I walked in and anybody looked at me and thought I was different, but yeah. I felt like where I was at home felt very different than the, sure. the more affluent, upper crust school. You know, I'd go to like some birthday parties and these massive subdivision McMansion kinds of houses and stuff. And, yeah. and I just sort of generally felt like an outsider. Middle school kids are the worst. And so like, I'm sure a lot of these kids, I haven't kept up with most of them, have grown up to be like really nice, decent people. That was not my experience in that school in middle school.
Yeah.
The handful of friends I had were sort of the nerdy outcast kids.
Yeah.
At least again, middle school perception. I played baseball. The school didn't have a football team, so I played like city league football.
Yeah.
And playing sports kind of put me in a position where I kind of maintained normalcy. But
yes.
yeah, it was just generally I didn't connect with the kids. None of them intersected with my life in any way.
Yeah.
The teachers were great, I think. The education mm-hmm. was good, and that doesn't matter at all when you're 13 years old. So
exactly.
It was all of that. And then there was also just the aspect of Christian school hypocrisy is its own special thing, you know?
Oh, it's fascinating. Yeah. I think Ronnie went to a
smaller kind of conservative Christian school for at least some of his stretch from some of his stories. He probably has thoughts on that as well. But when I transitioned to the public school as a junior, my first day in school, something came up in one of our classes about Christianity. And mm-hmm. I was vocal in my beliefs, and we walked out and a kid walked up next to me and just said, "You GD effing Christian," and just walked away. And I was like, I love this place.
Gosh. Yeah.
I
yeah,
love this
exactly.
place so
I'm
much
home.
Because I know exactly where everybody stands.
Yeah.
You might take shots, but like, there's no phoniness. It's
yes.
just,
yeah.
I hate you. I hate you for what you believe. Perfect.
Yes.
Now we understand each other.
That's really funny, dude, and really fascinating. And you mentioned something before, just the feeling of like being around people with money for the first time and like seeing the inside of like a McMansion. I had that experience at Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
I went home for like a fall break with a friend from the football team who lived in Wheaton. And like, I went inside his house and I was like, does your dad like run a small country? Like, is he the king of something? This is amazing. I'd never seen anything like that in my life before.
And you're like, no, he's like, no, we're actually one of the poor Wheaton families.
Yeah, exactly. It was remarkable. So Ron, I'm kind of just doing a rundown of, I've asked Piper like what his high school context was. I thought it would be helpful for the listeners to know kind of what kind of context we went to high school in. So let's get yours and then we'll get mine and then we'll take a break. So what was your high school like setting or situation?
Yeah. So high school for me, that would be my fifth Christian school that I had been in up to that point in my journey. Yeah.
Fascinating.
So I went from a selection of large Christian schools to tiny Christian schools to medium sized. My high school is kind of an upstart. So it was kind of like a small to medium one that had just started, I think, a couple of years before I got there, which is what happens to a lot of them is they start with elementary, then they move into junior high, and then they finally get to high school. And I think I was the first year that they had started the high school. So there was like two of us there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There was a graduating class of like four. My freshman class we had like, 21 people in it, kind of a thing.
Uh-huh.
And so it was tiny. It was attached to a Pentecostal church.
Oh,
and
wow.
There was a lot of zaniness. It's not saying anything against Pentecostals, but this type of Pentecostalism that it was attached to was very expressive. I'll just say that.
Oh man.
And so our chapels were quite dynamic.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot. I mean, there was a lot. But again, We had just moved to a new town. This was back in the era. This was really pre-homeschool era being, you know, yes. kind of like the, yeah. the norm. Yeah. There were not a lot of Christian schools to choose from. So this was uh-huh. like the only one that offered a high school within yeah. In a pretty large city.
Yeah. Setting.
And so my parents being committed to that kind of education, this was the only shot. So, you know, whatever the theological things were there that they didn't agree with, and there were a few, it was like, well, it's the only game in town, so yeah, we got to do yeah. it, you know?
Dude, that's fascinating.
Yeah, so it was out of all the Christian schools I went to, they were all strange in their own way. This one was peak strange, for sure.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it sounds peak strange. Did you have a uniform?
So no, this was no uniforms, but they had sort of a dress code, which was, okay. you know, slightly enforced, slightly uh-huh. not enforced. I mean, this was back in the day when really it was just for the women, just yes, for the girls. Yeah. So the dress code really was for them, not for us, right? Because we're fellows, right? What, how can we screw up the dress?
How could
code,
we
right?
go wrong? Yeah, right, right.
How could we be immodest, right? Right. So it was more like that, you know, and they had like, it was back in the day when it was like, you know, so this is the 80s. So long, you know, long hair could only be so long. And boy, yeah. you know, boys could not have facial hair. And,
yeah.
you know, until you got into high school and then you could have a neatly trimmed mustache. So
yeah.
check that out.
Yeah.
And, oh, yeah.
Man, the 80s like were that. Nothing if not marked by neatly trimmed mustaches.
Oh, what a time. But, what a time to be alive.
Yeah. It was a crazy time to be alive. And so our school, I think our school had developed a little bit of the rep, which a lot of Christian schools did at the time, which was, it was a bit of a reform school in the sense that kids that just did not do well at public high school, but their parents were a little more well off, they could send their kids to our school to kind of get them straightened out. You know, yes. it was kind of one of those deals. And so yeah. we had a lot of that going on at our school, and it just
yeah.
dude, it just made for some interesting environments.
Well,
really
dude, back
interesting
then, yeah, it was. You and I are old enough, baby, that like we got everything in before the homeschool movement popped. So that wasn't even on. That wasn't a glimmer in anybody's eye back then, at least where I was. And yeah, you had the occasional Christian school, but it was where like. Yeah, kids who are having trouble would go, you know. So it was a completely different context or framework than what it is now. So for me,
well, it was yeah hold on ahead. One second on that, because this might help a little bit of your story.
Sure.
So what was interesting about that was like just how polarizing the student body was, right?
Oh yeah,
like in that way, like how yeah. different it was, like how eclectic it was, because you'd have some of the kids that had gotten kicked out of the major public high schools. They would get sent to our school.
Yeah.
And then we also had like, I think we had three girls whose like parents were like on, you know, professional NFL teams, major league baseball teams. So then, you know, they're showing up.
Cachiche. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So they're showing up junior of high school. I'm not, no exaggerating, with brand new BMWs that they got for their birthdays.
Yeah.
And then, so it was a range. I mean, it was a range of kids. Yeah.
That's wild.
So it's fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. It is. It is fascinating. And it's such a small ecosystem. I have questions for both of you on that we'll get to after the break. But my context real quick, I was in a public high school. It was a county school, Blackford County High School. We were the Bruins pipe. So we had a big bear.
Nice.
was our mascot, and we had the paw on the side of the helmet. We were red and black. Those were our colors, red helmets with a black paw, which looked really sharp, dude, just really, really good. We had an elite high school uniform, red jerseys, black pants, looked really nice, but we were probably by today's standards, a small public high school. We had like 800 kids total. So like 200 in the graduating class. And in retrospect, I loved it. I look back on those memories really fondly. You know, it kind of feels like when I would hear my parents doing like misty-eyed backward gazing about high school, everything had this like for them, this like 1960s patina on it. But I now have those memories about our school. The education probably wasn't very good. Although I was complicit in that, I wasn't very good at it. So I definitely did my part to make it mediocre. But you know, in kind of that magical public school way, there were some truly exceptional teachers there.
Yeah.
They were kind of in the minority, but there were some, and there were some that I really liked and gravitated toward and enjoyed. Yeah, what else? It was kind of your typical rough and tumble, blue collar town, drinking, fighting. Weed was just becoming a thing. Weed was not as ubiquitous as it is now, but you know, you had your like alcohol guys and your weed guys, and you know, it was a public high school.
By guys, do you mean partakers of or dealers in?
Both. Both.
Like
fans.
That's the guy you go to because his uncle will buy him a case of beer, that guy.
Oh, totally. Okay, yeah, and people were like drinking in fields, you know what I mean? Or like drinking in somebody's barn.
You were a country song.
Oh yeah, dude, we were a country song. You know, we were very much a country song, and like we had these interesting like rivalries against other towns that were exactly like us, you know. So we're playing like Elwood or Alexandria or whatever, and like we hate them, you know, we're riding the bus over there. But yes. Then I remember this experience of like, I actually roomed in college and played football in college with a kid who was from one of the rival high schools. And, you know, it took like a half a day for us to realize we have everything in common. We actually really like each other because now we have all this in common compared to everybody else at Taylor. I don't know. We went from being like hated rivals to like, you know, best friends in a matter of a half a day. You know, it was really fascinating.
It's like stepbrothers.
Yeah, it was like stepbrothers, exactly. I wish we'd gotten that portrait taken of each other, you know, for the dorm room. But I don't think there's much more to say about it. I went to public school throughout, so grade school, middle school, high school. My mom made me be in the band because if you were in the band, you got put in class with like good kids, quote unquote good kids. So she's like, here's a saxophone. I don't care if you play it. Just sit there and hold it, but you're going to be in class with good kids. So that was kind of the deal. And yeah, kind of a magical time, man, as I think back on it. Boys, we'll take a break. And on the other end of it, I want to ask you a specific question about high school persona stuff. We'll be back in 2 and 2. All right, boys, we're back. Pipe, we'll start with you. We'll just go in order again. Like, I think you'll get the gist of this question. Like, what kind of guy were you in high school? Like, what was your high school persona? And this can lead to storytelling, or it can just kind of be indicative of what kind of dude you were.
I was really different at school than I was in the rest of my life. And not in a hypocritical way, I don't think, in terms of, you know, bad kid at school, good kid everywhere else, which is youth group and church was sort of the center of my social life.
Yeah.
And that was a big reason why I was different at school, because I just didn't care about the people there. Yeah. I didn't really want to be friends with anyone.
Yeah.
I was friendly enough, but I was, you know, I played sports, but I wasn't a jock, you know. So when I was at the Christian school, there was like three families who were the jocks. You know, that's just how it works. Like, there's like this pair of brothers, this other dude whose older brother is the math teacher, and somebody else, you know, like that. Those are the jocks. Everybody else is just,
they're like good looking, rich white guys. They shoot threes, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like,
they play shortstop.
Like, yeah. And one of those sort of uniquely gifted families where there's two brothers who both, they're 3 years apart, and both of them end up leading the team to like the state quarterfinals, even though we're a tiny school. They lead the state in scoring, all this stuff. Yeah. So
now they're mega church pastors or CEOs of corporations.
I'm sure they work in finance now. I just existed in that world and just kind of tried to maintain a non-profile. Good student, not the best student, that kind of thing. In the public school, because it was such an eclectic, diverse place, but like ethnically, socioeconomically, because South Minneapolis is this interesting mix of, there's very wealthy neighborhoods kind of nearer to the lakes, and then there's really rough urban neighborhoods, and both of those feed into the school.
Yeah.
Meaning there was no cool kids. Everybody just sort of had their crew. So really significant, like, drama and arts program and music program. And then the sports teams that were good were like the soccer team, the baseball team, the hockey team. Our football team was not good. Basketball team was solid. And so I just sort of floated and was a non-entity there socially as well. You know, got along fine with my teammates, but was never tight with them, never really hung out with them too much other than like the occasional like team function kind of thing.
Yeah.
My entire social life was through church friends. And so I was in that crowd, was like the gregarious, obnoxious, argumentative, like kind of.
Yeah.
The dominant personality came out. At school, it didn't. I the same way I am now. If I don't want to be somewhere, I just sort of sit there with my arms folded and wait for it to finish. And that's kind of how I went through 4 years of high school.
That's fascinating how the personas can change based on the context. One quick follow-up question, and we'll ask Ron the same question. Did you have a girlfriend in high school?
Kind of, but no. The short answer is no. So there was a girl at church who she and I mutually really liked each other, but like dating was not forbidden in our culture, but very frowned upon.
Oh, that's fascinating.
You have to remember the I Kiss Dating Goodbye revolution.
Dude, that hit you.
Oh, was in full swing. And here's the
thing.
That's
so wild, dude.
I thought that was utter trash from the moment I heard about it. And that hasn't changed in the last 25 years.
Yeah, right.
You know, it remains as trashy as it ever was.
Yeah.
But the cultural influence was really strong. But I think the real reality was just I kind of looked at it and I had in my mind, I was like, dating this, you know, we're 17. Where's this going to go?
Yeah.
And so there was a little bit of a lack of courage on my part. There was a little bit of cultural influence. And then there was a little bit of, I don't know, maybe what was common sense, just to say, throwing myself into this, it's probably going to pull me away from friendships. It's probably going to cost me a lot of money. And it's probably not going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
I watched my friends get real caught up in dating relationships and basically disappear from my life for 6 months at a time and then come back and talk about how miserable it was to break up. And I was like, that sounds dumb. I'm not sure I want to go through that. So it was one of those like a long-standing, not quite girlfriend who I probably frustrated the mess out of because it was not quite.
Yeah, dude, that's fascinating that the kiss dating goodbye thing hit you, because it didn't for me and Ron. And
our youth pastor at the time, I mean, and I got to be careful, because if this is the one story I tell about him, people will think he was a clown. And in fact,
sure,
wonderful Bible teacher, great friend,
yeah,
really good discipler.
Yeah,
occasionally made dumb mistakes because he was like a 27-year-old youth pastor or whatever he was at the time, 25.
Yeah,
he decided to do a dating series based on that on like Wednesday nights, and I just skipped church for like 2 months. Which is not a thing that I ever did. And the thing is, I think my parents knew I was skipping and didn't care.
Yeah, they probably knew why, too.
Yeah, if we were going through 1 Corinthians and I skipped, they would have, like, grounded me from life.
Yeah.
But they're like, that stuff probably, you know, don't worry about it. So it just, and the thing is, there was a whole bunch of us who were upperclassmen at that point who were just like, we're not doing this. So basically, all of that got taught to, like, the 13-year-olds, while all the 17-year-olds were like, we're going to go hang out at a coffee shop. we're not doing this garbage.
Interesting. Ron, what kind of guy were you persona-wise in high school? What did it look like?
Oh, dude. You know, I was pretty distant with all I felt like I didn't have much in common with, the 6 other high schoolers that I went to school with. And I had one really close friend that kind of crossed over from my high school to my youth group.
Yeah.
And, it was strange. I started driving at an early age, like the day I could get my license, my dad made sure I had my license and a car because he was like, buddy, you're driving.
That's just how it was done back then.
Well, part of it was like, you know, he owned a trucking company, so I could make small deliveries for him too. So I started making money really early on.
Yeah.
And driving, had a ton of freedom, had a very, very, very the opposite of Piper, serious, we're going to get married and have 20 kids relationship in junior and senior year.
Yeah.
So it was all of that. And but my main thing was, when I started high school, I was racing motorcycles, and that was my life. And yeah. it was completely detached from anything going on at the high school. So I just sort of, high school was like a job, man. I just checked in and checked out and did what I wanted to do. And then the last half, when that ended, and then I got all into music stuff, it was kind of the same thing, because I had a completely different friends group that I was running with. And then, you know, kind of how it worked was I had all my credits in by my senior year for graduation. So all I had to do was take what they called, what would they call it? Just classes that you, what's
electives.
The word?
Like
that you had.
Yeah.
That you all know, classes required. I had two required classes.
Yeah.
So I went to school for about an hour and a half every day my senior year. And then I just worked for my dad and worked on music the rest of the week, the rest of the days. So I was just making a lot. You know, I was just kind of making I had a decent paycheck as a senior in high school.
Yeah.
And I was buying equipment. I was working on music. So it was like I wasn't there, which was fine with me, because it was just, it made no sense to me. It was foreign.
Right.
I had nothing. I felt like I had nothing in common with any of these people, and I was just biding my time, just to exit, you know.
Dude,
what's
fascinating about that to me is that hearing you describe that experience, you would have so much in common with like the college students that I teach today. Like none of them had normal high school experiences, and they're all piecemealing it. They all clept out of like Algebra 2 and. You know, when they were 11, and you know, like none of them sort of went to high school in the traditional sense of the word. What was my question? Persona.
Well, the rules were so different. You know, I don't know why they were different, but I felt like the rules were so different. These small Christian schools were like, I mean, you know, we didn't even have half the classes that you had.
Dude,
to take
it probably wasn't even accredited. You know what I mean?
It probably wasn't.
Yeah.
So I don't even know if my diploma counts, right?
But some associate pastor like threw it together, and who knows, man?
Yeah, basically. So it was so loose, and it was like they didn't even you know I don't know if this was Pipe's experience, but like we didn't even have this thing where we were required to read like classic books, because those would have all been banned. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just things like that, right? Because they were too provocative or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's like all this. So when you compare my life with Big M's public high school life, she basically looks at me and she goes, "You basically didn't work for 4 years and somehow you graduated." I said, "Kinda." You know,
in a weird way, though, that's kind of what public school was like. If you were at sort of a lower end public school. Like I just remember, dude, I never brought a book home. I didn't do anything, you know, like it was a running joke in my family. My parents were like, "We haven't seen a textbook of yours in 4 years."
Like they didn't give you homework too? There was no homework.
I mean, they did.
Class periods were for.
That's it. So I was really committed to this is part of my high school persona. In my mind's eye, I was like, they get me for 7 hours, but then the minute I walk out of that place, the time is mine. So I was like, I'm not doing any of their stuff in my like non-school life. So my philosophy was, if I can't get it done at school, it's not getting done. So I would just do it. I would do it in the margins. I'd do it in other classes. I always had a study hall, which was a thing that nobody has anymore, where you just kind of walk around and goof off, do homework. Like walk down to the vending machine, see who you can chat up.
Vending machines. Wow.
Yeah, dude. It was a bit of a deal, man. Blackford High.
I don't think we had drinking fountains at our school. So,
dude, we had a lounge. The lounge consisted of like two sofas that were adjacent to the vending machines. It was a real decadent time. But never brought a book home. Somehow graduated, you know, somehow made it into a bunch of colleges still. But yeah, my persona was, and it's interesting, similar to yours, Pipe. There was like church stuff. I always dated people from like other towns. So like I had a girlfriend, she was from a different high school. My best friend actually went to a different high school. He was a guy that I met through church, and we were thick as thieves, did everything together. He was sort of like, in a cursory way, my foil, in the sense that, you know, at first glance, I was the big meathead bro jock. You know, I had the buzz cut and the too tight t-shirt, like subtext, I lift weights, letterman's jacket, like that whole thing. But I think at my school, I was just like, hopefully a nice guy who was kind of a friend to all. I didn't have really one crowd that I ran in high school, but I would kind of sometimes eat lunch with the jocks and sometimes eat lunch with like the theater kids because I thought they were interesting. And, you know, I just kind of filtered around. And I would say classroom wise, I was funny, but sort of in a low key way. I wasn't like the guy saying the jokes out loud, but I was whispering the jokes to you in the back row. You know, I was that guy at school, and I was kind of that guy at youth group too, to be honest. So me and this best friend, this guy Russell, we would just kind of sit in the back and make the jokes. What else, man? Went to prom my junior year. I went to this other girl's prom, and they had
tell us what that's like, man. We only had banquets at ours.
Yeah, dude, prom was wild. It's so like, it's funny in talking about 90s public high school. It sounds like stuff you've seen in a movie, you know? So if you've seen a John Hughes movie about high school, that was basically my deal. Like we had lockers, and we had, you know, teachers like ripping ciggies out on the loading dock in the back, and like guys smoking in the boys' room, to quote, you know, music. I mean, it was very like John Hughes movie-ish, but prom was that way too, in the sense that, you know, you would go have a quote unquote nice dinner somewhere. Which in
it was like TGI, you know, Fridays or something.
Yeah, in retrospect, it was like TGI Fridays and a bunch of derpy high school kids.
You were like an episode of Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, I mean, really,
restaurant in town is their equivalent to TGI Fridays or Ruby Tuesday or whatever it is.
Dude, totally, and you feel like a real stud because you're like going to a sit down place, you know? So you go to a sit down place, you're with like your best friend and his date, and then we went to prom. And it was a bunch of, you know, kind of awkward people, and like the super outgoing people would fast dance, and then the rest of us would just slow dance. And then in a public school context, they always had this thing called after prom. And after prom was like a lock-in at a YMCA so that you wouldn't go get hammered and like drive cars and stuff. So like we went to this lock-in at the YMCA, and you're like changing out of your tux, I don't know, in like a gym bathroom or whatever. And it was real weird. But then, you know, you just put on normal clothes. And my memory of after prom was that me and Russell had just, we had just learned to dunk. We were both kind of on the taller end of the spectrum, and we were like juniors. We just learned to dunk. So instead of hanging around our dates, we just found like a practice gym that had volleyballs in it and like lobbed volleyballs to each other all night and dunked. So I came home with my hands all like mangled up from after prom, but it was really fun, man.
Spend a lot of time with your date at the old after prom.
Needless to say, that relationship didn't necessarily work out. But no, we had a lot of fun.
Huh? Interesting.
No, that wasn't No, I didn't meet KK till college. That would come a few years later. But boys, I want to take the last break and then come back with another kind of specific question that'll lead to some storytelling. We'll be back in 2 and 2. All right, we're back. I'm going to put you on the spot, and you can take this however you want to take it. You could take it funny, you could take it serious. I just want like a, in true John Hughes fashion, I want like a coming of age moment from high school. So as you look back at that time, do we have, yeah, I know, it's tough. But I had to provide some structure for this thing, because in true Happy Rant fashion, we had done zero show prep, and I'm just going to kind of winging it here. But Pipe, can you think of a, like a coming of age moment?
Yeah, two of them, very different kinds of experiences.
I have two also. Yeah.
So one of them is as a freshman in high school. So this is the small Christian school. It's sort of two aspects of well, if you're listening with children right now, I would, at your discretion, possibly use earmuffs. I'm not going to use any profane language, but the subject matter is a little PG-13. So here we go.
There we go. All right.
Kind of two aspects of sex ed where.
Oh, yeah.
So we had, I'm pretty sure this was freshman year. Might have been middle school, but same school. So it all just kind of ran together in my mind. Our health teacher sent home a 20-page packet on like sexual anatomy, reproductive organs, all this stuff, because he didn't want to teach it.
Oh, man. Yeah.
So he sent home a packet and basically said, you need to go through this with your parents and have them sign it and return it. And so I bring it home. Man. And, like, I went through all 20 bleeping pages with my father, which is...
He must have come unglued, Pipe.
Pipe, that is brutal.
Unglued.
Yeah.
Well, they, like, nobody is more matter-of-fact as well as just comfortably publicly talking about sex than my dad. You know, he preaches about this stuff. You know, we used to have, a bingo game in church where, like, anytime he used the phrase, like, illicit sex or something like that, we'd be like, check.
That's outstanding.
Drink. So he didn't seem fazed by it at all. I, on the other hand, was mortified. And it's coming of age because there's actual sexual education going on. And then there's also the, like, I will never put my kids through this. Yeah. This is a traumatic. Yeah. This is a formative. There's a lot of things. So I come back to school. I turn the thing in. I'm talking to my friends about it. And I have a sense that they have not had the same experience I have. So I'm a little bit reticent to share. And I'm just like, man, how was that for you guys? And they're like, please, my parents just signed it and handed it back to me. We didn't even talk about it.
Yeah.
And I was like, that was a possibility? Like, not at the Piper house.
No, John Piper is such a man of integrity. Like, he was going through every page of that thing, dude. He wasn't going to just sign it, which is totally what I would have done.
Then the flip side of the sex education was a copy of that packet makes it into the hands of the upperclassmen. You know, so
great.
We go to baseball practice after school, you know, so there's everybody from like seventh graders to 12th graders on, you know, heading to practice. Cause we have to bus to a practice facility. Cause we met at a church, of course, cause we're a tiny school and that packet gets into the hands. And so then I'm getting the non-Piper version of sex ed from 11th graders who claim to be experts at this thing. And I'm pretty sure we're entirely virginal. And so That was one very coming of age experience.
That's incredible. Yeah. The fun thing about that one is, like, the characters in that story are all doing, like, what you expect them to do in, like, delightful ways. That's really good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's sort of the perfect paradigm for what would be like a sitcom. You know, just there's a whole script in there for somebody to write. The other one was my first ever car crash. So I was a junior in high school and had driven to a friend's house and it was starting to snow. And, like, I took my driver's test after we got 12 inches of snow. So, like, driving in snow wasn't a big deal, for us, being in Minnesota. It's just, that's half the year. But on the way back, I mean, it was borderline, it wasn't blizzard conditions, but it was really heavily snowing. The plows weren't keeping up. And I'm cruising down the freeway doing like 70. Did not learn to drive. Did not learn to drive in weather conditions. And I hit the guardrail. I spin twice across like six lanes of traffic. So I see the headlights of the semi truck behind me twice as I spin past it. End up on the other guardrail. Uninjured.
You see your life flashing before you.
But it was a very short flash before my eyes, you know, being 17 or whatever I was. And then I get there and I'm just stuck. There's no cell phones.
That's so funny.
And I'm too dumb to be frightened at that point.
Uh-huh.
I'm just sort of like, well, crap, what do I do now? And you basically just sit there and wait for somebody to show up and help.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure if I should keep the car running because I was like, is it going to blow up? But if I turn it off, it's 22 degrees outside. So that seems not smart. And, you know, all I've got is my letter jacket for warmth. And so I think I ended up turning it off out of safety and then it wouldn't turn back on. And finally, just some good-hearted person pulls up behind me. And they had a cell phone. They were one of like the six people in Minneapolis who had cell phones at that point. And so I didn't know what to do. So I called my dad.
Yeah.
And then there's the experience.
Was he kind of pissed or was he cool about it?
So perks of being fourth child. I was not the first car wrecked in our family. In fact, I was probably like the sixth. A couple of my brothers were a bit aggressive with their driving. So he was, he was not at all concerned. He wasn't panicky or mad. Yeah. But in my mind, I was going to get, you know, stapled to the door when I got home. And so then he from home has to coordinate calling the tow truck, who I rode back with. Like, no, my parents didn't come and get me. I just rode with the tow truck driver. My dad met me at the mechanic.
That's so great, dude. That's so 90s.
So, like, and so that one felt decidedly coming of age because of, there was a lot of lessons learned. Let's just put it that way. A big one being, like, my dad's not going to kill me if I do something dumb, which, you know, it took me until I was, like, 35 to realize that was actually true. But that was kind of the first big instance of, he's not a person to fear in that way.
Oh, that's fascinating. Funny. Those are really good. Baby, do you have one dialed or should I do mine?
No, I'm good, man. I actually posted some funny things on a social like last week about this, and these are two that are kind of tied together. But so again, weird Christian school, Pentecostal. Yeah. We would get people like prophets that would come in. We had this one prophet come in to speak in our chapel. Yeah.
This is great.
Everybody,
dude, I love if you're a prophet, your speaking gig is like a Christian high school with 12 people in it.
Right?
Like,
yeah,
I'll take it. It's on the circuit.
You know. He hadn't quite hit the arena circuit yet, right?
For prophecy. Yeah. There were bigger profits.
A lot of money in Christian high schools in the 80s, I'm sure.
Right.
There probably was, actually. But we all had to stand. Get this, guys. We all had to stand in line, and we would walk up on the stage. He would put his hand on our head, and then he would kind of like, you know, he would kind of, you know, prophesy over us. Yeah. So my prophecy, and I was the only one that got this, was that, Ronnie, someday you are going to be wildly successful. You can imagine the disappointment. You can imagine me, even today, still waiting.
Still waiting for it, baby. Still waiting for it.
Still waiting for that, for the prophets. Obviously a false prophet, you know.
Dude, so I have a question on that, if you don't mind. Is he saying all these out loud? Like, can the whole room hear?
Oh, the whole thing. Yeah, the entire school was there. Yeah.
So there could ostensibly be another guy coming up, and he might put his hand on that guy's head and say, you know, your life is going to be wildly mediocre. You know, it's going to be very beige.
You will be destitute at 28.
Your wife is going to be decent looking, you know.
You just can't make this stuff up, which is why. No. Yeah. Everybody's prophecy was positive. But for some reason, so this is what happened. So I remember getting to the back. You guys got to appreciate this, man. I'm standing in the back, and the rest of my friends were after me, and they came up, and one of them walked up and he kicked the wall and he said, "Well, you're lucky."
Oh, that's outstanding.
What was his?
I have no clue. I mean, it was just generic stuff. But for some reason, I got the, you know, wildly successful. Which again, when you're 16, it's like that means a lot of money. You know,
it still does, baby. Yeah,
even more so when you're 40 plus.
Yeah.
So the other thing that to kind of go with that was, so I don't know why, I don't know how it worked this way in Christian school, but so the first half of my high school career, I was a really good student, and I got all A's. I was just one of those guys.
Yeah.
I never had to try very hard.
Yeah.
But I kind of checked out my last couple of years, like a lot of people do. I was just bored. I didn't care anymore. Yeah. So when it came time to who was class valedictorian, I mean, there were dudes that were so much smarter than me that had already gotten their scholarships to go to these colleges. And I was just kind of floating. But I ended up getting class valedictorian with, wait for it, boys. You want to know what I had? My grade point average?
Lay it on us.
I was able to do it with a 3.4 each of
our. Attaboy. Attaboy.
And the only reason why was because they judged it for how many years you had been at that high school. So it only counted. I was the only guy graduating that had been there all 4 years. So therefore, just by
you're
that.
You're the valedictorian.
Exactly. Yeah. With a 3.4, you know.
Yeah.
And
it's one of those classic, great. I do not think that means what you think it means.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I just kind of skated in there. I went up to the one brain scientist kid, and I was like, hey, his name was Ivan. I'm like, Ivan. I know you should technically be valedictorian. I actually apologize to him. I said, dude, I'm kind of sorry because I should not be standing up there.
Shout out, Ivan.
And he looked at me and he said, yeah, I know.
Dude, what a response by him. That's outstanding. I love it. That's really good. I've got two as well. I've got a funny one and a more like I don't know, meaningful one, I guess. But the funny one was my freshman year. I think maybe I told this at a live show, but we had this thing in the fall called Sadie Hawkins, and it was a dance where the girl would ask the guy, and then you would, like, you know, drive to Muncie and get matching t-shirts at the mall, and then you'd go to this dance. And this girl asked me, she was a girl I kind of liked, she was a cheerleader. We had this kind of relationship where, like, I would say a funny thing to her in class and kind of make her laugh, you know, and for a ninth grader, that was like a real exciting moment. And so she asked me to Sadie Hawkins. I was really excited, and we go, and through the totality of the night, I can sense that she's kind of distant, you know, and she's just kind of distant. And then about an hour or so in, I realized she was really distant in as much as she wasn't there anymore. And so I'm kind of looking around, and I'm like, you know, hey, elephant in the room, but where's my date? And everybody's
where's
like,
my elephant?
Yeah, you're right. Everybody's like, I have no idea. So come to find out, she had been dating like this 22-year-old guy from like the next town over. And he, and I'm sure I'm exaggerating the age, but I think he was out of high school or something.
And so he might have been 40.
Not legal one way or the other.
Right. So he comes to pick her up and they leave. And I went through all the stages of grief in like 30 minutes because, you know, you're a teenager. So I think I probably went in the bathroom and like punched the wall. But then I realized I could use it for sympathy and like have a whole bunch of other girls kind of like, you know, leaning their head on my shoulder and telling me it's going to be okay. And I kind of enjoyed that. So I learned a lot that night, that the world was a cold, dark place that evening. But you know, we figured it
out. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Too. I love that.
Well, and it's fun. And it's so John Hughes-y, right? Like all these stories, they sound so John Hughes because nobody really has, they don't have these experiences anymore. You know?
And they're just so like in the grand scheme of things, they're not even as significant as a drop of water.
Oh my gosh, yes. They're so meaningless. You know, if somebody in that moment could have told me, like, literally in 4.5 years, you're going to meet this tremendous woman who you're going to eventually marry and spend 27 years of marriage with, I would have been like, ah. Cool, no big deal, we're good.
Yeah, why am I sweating this right now?
Why am I sweating this right now?
Why am I sweating anything right now?
Because
you're 16 and you sweat everything.
Sweat everything, yeah.
Everything is massive when it's like to the scale of a 14 or 16-year-old life. You know, you only have like a minuscule experience, minuscule wisdom, so everything feels enormous. You live a little longer and all that stuff just sort of shrinks to size. And you're like, oh, yeah, not a huge deal that when I was a senior in high school, the girl I liked started dating my best friend, even though I thought I should kill him.
Yeah.
In reality, you're like, well, I never asked her out. So cool. She had every right to do that. Not a big deal at all. Also, they're both happily married to other people now. So and so am I. So everything's fine. So
And in high school, you have this inflated sense of like people are always looking at me. When in reality, no one's looking at you because they're looking at themselves.
Yes. I have that conversation with my kids all the time. You know, if they're feeling insecure, I'm like, how much do you pay attention to other people? They're like, not at all. I'm like, exactly. That's how much everybody pays attention to you. Not at all. Nobody cares.
Great lesson to learn.
Like,
really,
you're good. You are good. Yeah. Don't sweat it. Yeah. But they can't. It doesn't matter. Just tell them that because it's something that's intrinsic. So they can't just say, oh, well, thanks for telling me that, Dad. I feel better now.
No, that's good. The other one is real sort of, it wouldn't be a John Hughes movie, it'd be in like, I don't know, All the Right Moves with Tom Cruise or like The Outsiders, something kind of grittier. So this was junior year, and I had matriculated up to the varsity and I was about to make my first start. And every high school has the guy who has like so much chest hair and so much beard that he looks like he's 35. I was not that guy, right? But that guy was super cool, and he was a senior. His name was Kevin, and Kevin like picked
his
the music.
Name was Kevin.
Yeah, his name, of course, it was right. Drove a Camaro. Always picked the music in the locker room. If you were like the alpha, you got to pick the locker room music. So I remember like before that first start, thinking, I have to impress Kevin, you know, I have to play well. And we were like outside linebackers together, like on the opposite side of the formation. So he played one side and I played the other. And you know, I'm like dry heaving in the locker room before the game, super nervous. But you know, we go out, we play the first half, and at the end of the first half, I get into this fight with this other kid, and he broke my nose. So he like grabbed my face mask and like jammed his fist up underneath it and like broke my nose. And yeah, I know. It's crazy. It's very the outsiders. So then, you know, we go into the locker room and I'm sitting on the concrete, like in the shower as this trainer is like shoving cotton up my nose. And like, I catch Kevin's eye and he like nods at me. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm in.
Oh, like, you got the warm tinglies from that. Yeah. It was so exciting.
Yeah, dude. I'm like, I'm a made man. Like, I don't care what else happens. Like, the rest of this season, I'm good now. So,
Kev, man. Kev gave you your props, man.
Dude, Kev was such a stud. And like, no matter what I ever accomplish in my life, I will never be as much of a stud as like he was as a senior. You know what I mean? You just like... Look at some of those.
If it makes
paradigms.
You feel any better, he will never be as much of a stud as he was as a senior either. So, I know.
And
you
may have
surpassed Kevin at this point.
Dude, sometimes I think about that, you know, and I think about, and not in judgmental, like, oh, this person peaked in high school or whatever, but like, I don't know. I wonder, yeah, just like what life looks like for some of those guys. But I learned so much about leadership, and I mean leadership has become like a trope in real life, but like also a trope on the show and just kind of a punching bag. But like I learned to lead from some of those guys who, like, when you're a derpy freshman, like they graft you in, you know, and they just decide, I'm gonna take care of you, and that's like real leadership, you know. So some of those lessons are good, even though the context was pretty broken. Boys, 54 minutes of radio.
Oh,
this was a banger. Absolute banger. Shout out to whoever suggested this on the internet that we do this. I think we're going to probably do something similar with college memories at the live show. This was a really fun one. Boys, we've done what we always do on this program. And until next time.
We want to take a moment to thank the team at Life Audio for partnering with us on this podcast. Be sure to go to lifeaudio.com and take a look at the other podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
Hello, my name is Adam Comer.
And I'm Ryan Chittister.
And we're the host of Life After Addiction Podcast. If you or someone you love struggles with addiction, check us out, Life After Addiction Podcast, and you can subscribe at lifeaudio.com.